better than expected or back to the bottom for Florida State in 2026? We got preseason expectations we're talking about. Can Florida State exceed those expectations, or are they about where they're supposed to be? We've also got recruiting talk to cover and some baseball and softball action that's been happening in the background, man. This is a fully loaded episode for you guys. This is going to be kind of like one of our old school Plant the Spear episodes, man. We got notes and charts and all this stuff that we're going to be going through today. So, man, this one's going to be a fun one for you guys. So buckle up. We're going through a whole lot of football talk today. And Michael, man, I can't wait to get into this one.
Yeah, it's one of our old school episodes where we start digging into the deep numbers and, you know, we're down in the matrix and you never know what black internet we done found. No, I'm just kidding. Now we're getting into an old school episode where we're just kind of looking at the numbers and letting the numbers tell us exactly what we should be thinking about this Florida State team coming up in this season.
Yeah, because we've been doing a lot of the big picture stuff over the last month or so, but now it's really time to start transitioning into preseason content. We got position previews coming up. We got preseason expectations. We got schedule breakdowns. All that stuff's going to be coming up. So obviously, guys, this is a great time to lock in with Plant the Spear. If you're going to enjoy episodes like this, go ahead and hit that like and subscribe button so you don't miss one of these, because I'm telling you, if you've watched this channel for some time, you know we leave no stone unturned. And so, man, I'm excited about this one because we're getting back to kind of our roots on this one. Now we're getting into the season. And you know what, man? I'm going to go ahead and say this up front, right? We're going to talk about the preseason expectations for Florida State. Can they beat them? Can they not? The truth of the matter is, man, I don't know that I would bet my own personal money that Florida State makes even a bowl game this year, right? Because there's a lot of trust issues that we have with the staff. But look, I'm going to be honest, man. To your point, I let the numbers, I let the details, the things that I look at, I let that guide me in how I look at things, right?
Right.
I mean, there's vibes, of course, right? There's vibes that go with it too, but there's a lot of data that you can run off of. And so there might be some things that I'm going to say today that they're going to be a little bit positive. And I know that's going to piss some of you guys off because some of you guys are the sky's falling no matter what. And that's okay. If you don't agree with it, that's fine. But again, we're just going off numbers and stuff. So, man, let's dive right into this. But before we do, let me bring you a quick word from today's sponsor so I don't forget throughout the show once we get to flowing, man. And that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, Michael, it's 9,000 degrees outside right now.
Yes, it is.
And if you need some dry fit gear, a cooler, a new hat, whatever you need, they got all kinds of summer gear, right? I've got a boatload of stuff in my cart right now for Alumni Hall that I'm looking to order for the summertime and the upcoming season. So make sure you check those guys out. We're all still Noel fans. If you're watching this channel, you're still bleeding garnet and gold. So might as well get you some new FSU gear from the Ultimate Seminole source. And that is Alumni Hall. 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee is their physical location. Of course, you can always shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. And while you're there, make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR. So if you're going to be there buying the gear, might as well save some money as well. Right. So we appreciate you guys shopping with them and for them supporting us. That's alumnihall.com. Code 10% off with promo code SPEAR. You can also use that in-store or online. So Michael, let's jump into this, right? What really sparked this conversation, the background for this episode, was there were some things that recently come out. You know, all the talking heads and stuff like that. It's that time where they start to put out preseason projections, and we saw ESPN, Bill Connelly dropped his S&P Plus rankings for the ACC. We've seen On3, they just dropped some power rankings for the ACC, and FanDuel, of course, they had the odds out as well. So we're going to use those to set the stage. Then we're going to talk about reasons why we think they may or may not exceed these expectations. So I'm going to go ahead and flip over here to those watching on YouTube. We got some things we're going to pull up here. If you're listening on podcast only, audio only, we're going to make it make sense for you. So don't worry about that. Hopefully this goes smoothly. We spent like an hour trying to get this set up before the show because I had some really cool resources that I wanted to share with you guys here. So, man, let's start with the S&P Plus rankings. Now, what this is a formula put out by Bill Connelly of ESPN, as I mentioned before. It is tempo and opponent adjusted. It's an efficiency model, right? It's predictive, not resume based. It's not always the most correct, right? But it's just it's a good talking point. It's been around for a long time. He's been doing these for a while. And so what we're going to look at here is basically where he has Florida State, right? Now, he is picked us to finish 12th in the ACC. And I got to say, On3's got us at 13th. And in the preseason power poll, which we'll get to in a second, FanDuel's got us at 11th. So, man, unfortunately, the consensus is it's going to be another rough year for the Noles, right? But right. That's why today we're going to actually dig in from some people who, you know, really know the team. Because these national guys, they do right. the best they can, but they don't always know the nuances of things. And so that's why we're going to dive in and see what we think, whether this is fair or foul on this. Now, let me first say before we get into these rankings, in fairness, Florida State was projected to finish first in 2024. So essentially, these really are just guesses, right? But they're not exactly pulled out of thin air. They use whatever data they have available in the preseason. But as we know, teams are obviously allowed to over or underachieve these rankings, as we just mentioned, in 2024. I think the main takeaway as we get into this is, man, we finished 17th in the ACC in 24, tied for 13th last year, and are now projected to finish 12th. Like, it's a painful truth of where we right. are as a program right now. And really what we're looking for, at least here at Plant the Spear, is, man, just give us a direction this year. Give us a make or break year. Let's see whether Mike Norvell can actually get off the mat and prove that he can maybe turn this thing around. Or let's just hope that things – I don't hope that things are going to go bad, but maybe they're bad enough that we get a new coach and we can just start fresh, right? That's pretty much what we're looking for. So, man, as we get into these rankings, I'll just let you give me some overall thoughts on your thoughts on just the 13th and the 12th and the 11th and kind of where we stand preseason. Then we'll talk about these rankings individually.
Yeah, I mean, it – you know, I think a lot of this is based – because as we'll see some of the numbers may be a little bit contradict this. And so this is a lot of based on vibes. There's a lot of distrust with the current status nature of the program. And more specifically, not to be negative, because this is just what's out there. I think there's a lot of distrust with the staff currently. The staff has proven that it can go to the – it can build from the lowest of lows to the highest of highs and then drive that ship right back down into the lowest of lows. And so a lot of this is probably being based upon just the vibes that these, you know, Bill Connelly and all these other guys are feeling. But I think as we get into the numbers, we'll see that the numbers tell a little bit of a different story. And our job is to try to interpret the two.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, because when I was doing my notes for this, a lot of this was kind of like, well, it doesn't make sense, because if they have us here, then why are we there, right? But I think you nailed it when you say, like, it's just a trust issue right now. And, and I've said that in a couple of episodes where, you know, you could give Mike Norvell a Ferrari, and I don't know that I would bet that he would beat, like, a Volkswagen Beetle, right? He should in every day in any kind of race, but that doesn't mean he's going to, right? And that's just kind of where I'm at, man, because, you know, like you said, you've taken us to 13 wins and an ACC title, and you've also produced a two-win season. So it's just kind of where are we at. So let's start with the S&P projections here. Florida State does fall 12th in this with a average of 4 conference wins. He's giving us actually a 76.4% chance to make a bowl, which is kind of where that line falls on the regular season win totals through Vegas as well at 6.5. Now, obviously, you can see here that Miami is number one on this list. SMU is number two. Louisville comes in at number three. Clemson, 4. Virginia Tech, first year under James Franklin, comes in at number 5. Virginia, 6. NC State is 7th. Pittsburgh is 8. Duke is 9th. California is 10th with a new coach. And Georgia Tech is at 11th. Of course, you got the typical, you know, ACC kind of bottom feeders there.
Right.
Down there at the bottom in the predictions. Now, when it comes to a possibility of an 11-win season, Miami's the only one on this list that actually makes that at more than nothing, basically.
Right.
We have a 0.4% chance of winning 11 games, and I would agree with that, right? But I think the quick takeaway here in the S&P projections are the margins are very slim, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're looking at these teams where you have the difference between 12th and 5th, is a fraction of a win. Now, the thing is, we can't, like, there are 8 teams in the 4 conference win range separated by a fraction of a win, which we know is not possible because you can't win a fraction of a game.
Right.
So that means if you can pull one upset like SMU and you can avoid an upset like at BC, you could potentially shoot up these rankings. Like, if you get the 5 conference wins, according to what he has here, you're now 5th in the conference. So, you have a real chance to make some headway in here. That's why some of these preseason rankings are, you know, you hear 12th, but you have to look at the kind of the read between the lines of things where it's like, okay, we're 12th, but 11 and 10 are 4.1 wins and we're 4.0, which is not even possible. So that's kind of the nuance that you have to take in this. Now, when you look over at the On3 power rankings here, going to follow a very similar trend. Florida State comes in at 13th in the ACC. Per On3, one of the things they said, you know, Florida State, as we know, hasn't won a true road game in the last 2 years, and they've gone 7-17. So I think that's a trust issue that you're talking about there. Again, some of the same players here. Miami, SMU, Virginia, Louisville, Clemson round out the top five. Duke, Virginia Tech, Cal, Wake Forest, NC State, Pitt, Georgia Tech, Florida State, getting down to our number there at 13th. So then we flip over to the FanDuel odds, and it just kind of builds on to this thing here, right? Florida State's regular season win total, as we talked about, 6.5, which is kind of tied for ninth there. You have a lot of the one thing I take away from this, there's a lot of compression in the middle of the conference. Seems to be that there's top tier, then there's that middle compressed of about 6-8 teams, and then you have the ones where they just don't think they're going to be able to do much this year.
Right.
Obviously, in the odds rank, you're pretty low there too, at plus 3,500 to win the ACC. Now, I think the point that I should make of this show, right, is we're not necessarily saying Florida State, by beating the odds, is going to win an ACC title, right? That's not what we're saying. We're saying, can they finish better than the 12th, 11th, and 10th, you know, that kind of area? Can they finish better? Can they do top 10? Can they get to maybe top 5 or 6? That's not good enough, but that's what we're looking at. And so some of my other takeaways here, man, is, you know, can they do that, right? Of course they can. But the issue, I think, that makes all of us Florida State fans hesitant right now to pick them to do that is the ugly truth that we've only won 3 ACC games in the past 2 years.
Right.
Even the second best season under Mike Norvell in 2022, they went 5-3 in the ACC, but 4 of those 5 ACC wins were against teams that finished in the bottom half of the conference. Right. They went 1-3 versus teams in the top half. Now, why is that important? Why do I bring up 2022? Well, that's because by projections, if you're looking at the schedule and matching it up with the things on the screen right now, you play 7 of the top 8 teams in the conference by projection, with BC being the only outlier. It's not an easy path that you drew in the ACC this year. Now, the good thing is you get 4 of those 7 teams, the tough teams, at home, and FSU was 5-3 at home last year. So you do play better at home, but man, again, you get 7 of the top 8 projected teams in the ACC on your schedule this year, combined with Florida and Alabama. That's a really tough schedule. And so at least you get some of them at home, but man, it's not going to be an easy path. I think, you know, I'll kick it back to you on this. I think a lot of it, when we look at, okay, well, the stats say this, the talent says this, really it comes back to that schedule and just how tough that schedule is. Now, I will say this last thing, and I'll kick it to you. One thing that I found interesting, because I kind of feel the same way that Bill Connolly did say in his article when he released this, if you told me right now that FSU was going to produce a top 20 caliber surge or finish under 500 for a third straight season, I'd believe you. So he believes you either way. He thinks you could either way overachieve, or it could be another tough year, and he would buy either way. And I think pretty much all of us right now just don't know what to think about the season, man.
Right. Well, I mean, again, I said this on a previous episode. If history proves correct, this should be a 10-plus win season. Because if you go back and look at Mike Norvell's history at Florida State, they went 3-6 in the COVID year. They went 5-7 in his first real full season. Then they went 10-3, 13-1, 2-10, 5-7. So again, like, you know, he likes climbing mountains. He likes falling down mountains. So now, yeah. So now he's coming back up. So he should be able to, if projections hold, I can believe what Bill Connolly says, that this could be a super increase, because history so far has proven that he can actually climb up this mountain. The other side of it, though, is I can also believe that he could have a terrible season again, because he has proven to us multiple times this will be his 7th season. So in 4 out of the 6 previous seasons, he's had losing seasons. So I can also believe that as well, too. So it's really a Jekyll and Hyde kind of program.
Yeah.
That's one of the issues we have as a program, is that there's no consistency in this.
Yeah, we certainly went up the one side of the mountain, and then we came right back down the other side. It was a cliff on the other side. We went straight down. And to your point with 2022, the reason, that's why I bring it up right before, where I'm like, okay, if you had drawn, looking at this list that we're looking at here, you know, if you had drawn five of the bottom teams in the ACC. If you had like a Boston College, I don't even want to say Stanford, but let's say Stanford at home, right? Syracuse, North Carolina, Wake Forest this year. I'd feel pretty good about you having a rebound year and getting back on track. But the fact that you're getting seven out of the eight top teams projected in the ACC. Now, granted, we don't know where these teams are going to fit, right? They could end up being way worse than what we thought they are. That's the part that makes it tough, right? Is you're going to have to overachieve to even get to five conference wins this year. So, the next thing we're going to talk about here is, you know, kind of why we feel that way. And one of the things that I want to talk about here is I just got my hands on Phil Steele's – I said it right that time. Phil Steele's preseason magazine yesterday. And I was combing through some of his projections, and he has us ninth in the ACC. So another kind of disappointing but at least top 10 finish there. And hear me when I say this, top 10 in the ACC is not good. It should be top 10 in the country. But there are some things that I find interesting. So let's get into it. So some of the things that he talks about in general was Florida State was plus 76 yards per game in ACC play last year, which was third in the conference. And they were plus 143 yards per game overall. Now, what he says is that these numbers indicate a team that should have gone 6-2 in the ACC, not 2-6. So it's one of those where, and I'll expand on this later when we get to our own thoughts, this team just found ways to lose games, right?
Yes, they were
better than the record indicated. Now, another thing he has is Florida State is his number one team in what he calls his going up box, which is based on conference yards per game versus conference wins. And he does claim these numbers have had historically a 75% success rate. So basically what he's saying is based on how they did on the field, not on the scoreboard, but on the field, they should do better this year, right? They should be going up. He also has us as, I think it was the number eight projected most improved team. Now, he had us number one last year, and we only improved by three wins. So we'll see how that works out. You know, the one thing I will say about Phil Steele is, like, his magazine is historically pretty accurate. He claims that it's one of the most accurate magazines out there. But the problem that I have is when you have so much change from year to year coordinators, you know, you're looking back at what we did last year, and a lot of that team is not here anymore. That coordinator's not here anymore. So it's hard to project forward when what's in the rearview mirror doesn't look the same as it did last year, right? It's harder and harder to do. And so he did say it was very rare to be the number one most improved team on his list and then not make a bowl. So, hey, we're, you know, setting precedences all over the place here. Now, I will say one thing that is very interesting to me is he has his own metrics on how he does strength of schedule. He actually has FSU schedule 23 spots lower in the strength of schedule rankings this year. Now, I don't know how. I don't know what kind of science that he has involved in that, but this year seems a little bit tougher than last year, right? To me, for sure. Now, as we get into some of the unit rankings here and stat projections and all that stuff, this is where I find some of the disconnect, right? So we're looking here. He does the position unit rankings, which I have compiled here into a composite ranking system. And this is in just the ACC, right? So Florida State's composite rank across all position groups factored in is seventh. You're averaging around 6.56. Your strengths here are the running back position at number three, the receivers at number three, the O-line at number three, which is a bit of a projection there, and then the D-line at number four. The glaring weaknesses are quarterback at 10 and special teams at 13. Now, he does have four teams tied at 10 here, or five teams tied at number 10 in your quarterback rankings. He's a little bit indecisive in his rankings, but I think
his linebacker's at 10 too.
Right. And so you have a couple, you know, quarterbacks here that I just think we don't know. You know, we don't know a lot about. We talked about that in the preseason quarterback rankings where Ashton Daniels was 12th in the ACC per on three. We could have seen him at 10th. We could be fair at 12. We're kind of indecisive on that. But yeah, man, you named it as well. The linebackers here at number 10, the DBs at number seven. So to me, I think when you look at the picture of what he's got here, and the reason I even bring Phil Steele into this, right, is because he's had a chance to look at everybody else right now. I'm still going through that portion of my preseason research right now, because as much as you can know about Florida State, a lot of the prediction models come off what you know about the other team. What is everybody else looking like?
Right.
Obviously, we know Miami's loaded across the board at a lot of things. Clemson is still a very talented team. SMU's number three on this list in the composite of the position group rankings. Louisville, 4. Virginia, 5. Pitt, 6. Florida State, 7. So, again, you're playing a lot of those tougher teams. Now, you are ahead of NC State. You are ahead of Boston College. So you're ahead of some of these teams that are on your schedule that you should be beating here. But, man, when I look at the fact that you have potentially the top three running back, receiving room, O-line room, a top five D-line unit, according to Phil Steele, of course, to me, if the quarterback and if the linebackers turn out better than expected, that means you should probably outperform the preseason expectations that we just laid at your feet.
Right. Well, absolutely. Yeah. If you've upgraded those things, and you should see a marketable improvement around them, you know, obviously with some of the, and including the new coaching staff that are some, and in some of those positions, like the DB position, the defensive end position with Nick Williams. So hopefully you'll be able to see some of that, you know, as well. The thing for me is the quarterback, obviously, because you don't know what you're getting with Ashton Daniels. You have a small sample size at Auburn. You have a little bit bigger sample size at Stanford, but he didn't have the best team around him. You're not exactly sure which version of Ashton Daniels you're going to get. Are you getting the one that, you know, took Alabama to the brink, or are you getting the one that tried to play against Kentucky and got smacked? So I think that's some of the unknowns that are factoring into those rankings.
Yeah, for sure. And now here's where I really kind of, this starts getting head scratching, right? When we go over to the projections, and the experience chart is a little bit messy. So we'll dive into that at a later time, but this is where I get a little bit weird, right? So how things add up, because right now he has Florida State. Now, what he does, a computer model on this, right? And he projects kind of what your offense will do, yards, points, differentials, your defense, same thing along that line. And the thing is, man, like historically, he's actually pretty darn close on a lot of these, which is why I find this so interesting. So he has Florida State in the ACC with the number two projected rushing offense. Now, I could see that because you have Ashton Daniels, you have a loaded running back room. If that offensive line turns out to be somewhat decent, I could see you having one of the better rushing offenses in the ACC because you're going to rely very heavily on your run game. Now, from an offensive standpoint or a pass offensive standpoint, he has the 8th ranked passing offense for Florida State this year in the ACC. That I could kind of also understand. Now, 245 basically yards per game might sound a little generous with Ashton Daniels at quarterback, but again, you have a pretty good receiving unit as well. So I could see that as well. Number two in total offense, around 462.8 average yards per game. The points, he actually has you projected to have the number three scoring offense in the ACC at around 33.4 points per game. Again, man, it's looking like he's expecting this offense to be humming, and that would be huge because he kind of does put the defense at a little bit. It's still good, but there's some other nuances to that as well. And that is the rush defense starting out at number 9 in the ACC. Oof. And I think a lot of that, you know, has to do with some of the defensive line. You know, we don't have a lot of big guys up front. We struggled to stop the run a lot last year. You know, the Florida running back Jane Boss still running all over us right now. the pass defense, he actually has his number 2 in the ACC. Maybe. We'll see, right? I mean, I think we got some real talent on the back end of this defense, so I don't think that's really kind of out of the question. Number 4 in total defense and number 2 in scoring defensive points allowed at around 21.9 points per game. Now, where you really get interesting is with the differentials. He has Florida State, by these numbers projected, at plus 119.9 yards per game. That means their offense is outgaining their defense on average by almost 120 yards per game. That is 11th nationally, 2nd in the ACC. That's big-time stuff, man.
Wow.
If that's the case, and let's throw in the points per game there, he has you at plus 11.5 points per game, which is 2nd in the ACC and 15th nationally.
Wow.
If this holds true, to me, again, how can you be top 15 in points and yard spread and yet finish 13th in the ACC? Now, that comes back to you got to learn how to actually win games, because we just told you that they were, what, plus 76 yards per game in ACC play last year and still only won 2 ACC games. So these are the numbers, man, that are just, I find really, really interesting when we look through Phil Steele's stuff. Now, again, it's not the gospel. He's not 100% right. correct on right. all these, but his numbers are usually pretty decent. And so, you know, again, man, when you're looking at the differentials here, you know, of course, Miami's number one, SMU's number three, Pitt four, Virginia five, Clemson six, Virginia Tech seventh, Louisville eighth, NC State ninth, Wake Forest at 10. But Florida State's coming in the second almost across right. the board here. And I find that right. pretty darn interesting.
Well, like, yeah, I think part of this is like, I'm curious to where he's getting, what is in, what is making up his valuation model? Like, where is he getting the numbers from? Is he basing this as off of what he saw last year? Because that most of that team is gone. The coordinator's gone. The offensive line is completely different. So that's where I'm curious. Now, he's had a 75% history or historical accuracy rate in his projections. So you know that he, you know, this is not just something that he's made up or just pulled out of the wind somewhere. But also, I'm wondering how much of his model is standing up in the new transfer portal era yeah. where players are transferring almost every single year. Valuations are different every single year. And again, going back to last year where he projected Florida State to be the number one most improved team, and they only won five games.
Yeah.
So if this model holds true, then this should be, in essence, a top 15 team in the country, at least offensive-wise. And I can't really see the defensive numbers, but it looks like that the defense still is projected to be somewhat decent.
Second in the ACC, yeah.
Second in the ACC, which would then make this a top 15 team complete in the country. Now, obviously, coaching matters, so the numbers only tell you one side of the story. What actually happens on the field tells you the other side. So I'd be curious to see how much of this actually comes to fruition for Florida State this season.
Yeah, I know he has a computer model. Obviously, he's probably not going to put that out because that's probably right, his proprietary right. deal. But I do know he talked about in the Florida State page, in, you know, in his magazine where I think it was like 2023, his predictions were, I think, like less than two or around 2 points off for the season, which is pretty darn accurate. So, like, right. as long as it's not wildly inaccurate, if this is even remotely in the ballpark, this shows you that whatever model projection that he's using shows that Florida State should be better than 12th or 13th in right. the daggone ACC to begin right. with. You know, and so when we go and we look at just kind of our own personal thoughts here, we've shown you the data, kind of where everybody has a sitting and where Phil Steele, I knew I was going to mess it up at least once, where Phil Steele has us. Now, I will say one thing before we move on from Phil Steele here is he does do national unit rankings as well. Mm. Now, from the quarterback position, Florida State was not ranked, and he had 70 teams ranked. He had top 70. Florida State was not even in the top 70. Guys, first off, that's an issue, right? Florida State should never be out of the top 70 in quarterback rankings. Now, he did have your running back room top 10 in the entire country, and I don't disagree with that. We'll get into that in a little bit. Wide receiver group, he has the number six wide receiving core in the entire country. A lot of that, of course, is because of Deuce Robinson being one of the most proven receivers in the country that's returning. O-line, he has you at 23rd, which, you know, we'll see. I mean, Herb Hand worked some magic last year, so we'll see if he can reproduce that this year. On the defensive side, he has your D-line at 23rd. That one I might find a little bit hard to believe. I think it kind of depends on how, like, guys like Rylan Kennedy and the Twins and all that, how they do in this system. Linebacker at 65. Look, I like Chris Jones. I don't know about everybody else, to be honest. I think you got some pieces there, but I don't know how they're going to work out. We've seen some good and bad from that group. DB at 35. I think that's fair. I mean, I think you got some talent on that back end. Let's not forget, Jabril Rawls is an NFL guy. You've got a few of these guys that came over that are pretty talented. Now, your special teams really is one of the wild cards this year. It's not ranked out of 65. We know that we got a new special teams coordinator and also a new punter and kicker. So, you know, Michael, at this point, we've shown you the data. I want to transition into kind of my thoughts and your thoughts after seeing these numbers, seeing the projections, and starting to do some of my preseason research. Now, there are going to be a few things that I'm going to save for position previews where we get kind of long-winded about each projection of these. But I will say when I get into this, per the advanced metrics on our website that we have added on there, Florida State's underlying stats last year were worth 1.5 more wins than their actual record. So, you know, this team, like as bad as last year was, let's be honest, man, Florida State just found ways to lose, point blank period, right? Of the four-game losing streak, every loss was by single digits. And, you know, first off, you have a double overtime loss to an 11-win Virginia team where if Deuce doesn't bobble the catch in the end zone, you probably win that game.
Yeah.
you weren't as close as the score indicated versus Miami. You know, we'll admit that. I know that game ended in a one-score game. It was not that close. You were being blown out in the basically going into the fourth quarter there. But that Miami team played for a national championship. So let's forget that that Virginia team and that Miami team were pretty darn good last year. You know, Pitt was a three-point game that if Deuce hadn't have got hurt and missed most of that game, you probably win that game too, right? Yep. I mean, just being honest. Stanford was an absolute embarrassment, and I'm not excusing
that. Should have won it, though.
But it was a seven-point game where if Gavin Salchuk gets six more inches, and I think he kind of got in, to be honest.
I think he got in, too.
You have a chance to win that game. Now, granted, you would have had to stop them, and you'd had to, you know, go to overtime and all that stuff to win that game. But also, remember, Tommy got a concussion and missed the end of the fourth quarter in that game. So if those two things don't happen, you probably win that game. Even NC State was a three-point game late that who knows what happens if you don't have a punt doink off your head. Right. The point, what I'm trying to say is I'm not making excuses for losing, but the games you won, you dominated, right? Bama by 14, East Texas A&M and Kansas or Kent State by a million. And I know people are going to go, well, it's East Texas A&M and Kent State. I get that, right? Those scores don't matter. But for reference, SMU, who was one loss away from playing for a conference championship last year, they opened with East Texas A&M at home last year, and that was a 17-point game at halftime. Florida State was up 49-0 a week later at halftime. Yep. You beat Wake by 35. That was a good bowl team last year with Wake. You beat Virginia Tech, who was bad, by 20. So you clobbered the teams that you beat, right?
Right.
And five of your seven losses were close and winnable games. Clemson and Florida were really the only ones that got away. This team, last year's team, should have won 8 or 9 games, man. As ugly as it was, the product on the field should have won you 8 or 9 games. You just found ways to take yourself out of games late. And when you had a chance to put it away, you just couldn't do it. So that's the thing, man. If that team last year was, you know, I hate to bring up the Jimbo thing, but a game of inches, right? An inch here, an inch there. From potentially being an 8 or 9 win team, and this team might potentially be better than last year's team, well, then why can't they be an 8 or 9 win team, right? That's what I'm getting at. And so, man, just give me some thoughts on that, and then I want to go through the offense and defense here, but just give me some thoughts on like the things I just talked about, man, where the record is kind of like 2-10. The talent did not equal a 2-win team, but you still won 2 games. Last year, the play on the field, the numbers, the stats – didn't equal 5 wins, but you still won 5 games. So to me, no matter what you do with the talent, if you could bring, you know, there's no rules in the NCAA now. If you could bring Jameis back at quarterback, that's great, man. You still got to find ways to win. It doesn't always matter that you're the most talented team if you just find ways to lose games.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll talk about it in this way. In hiring, they always talk about how there are 3 C's: character, competency, chemistry. There's a fourth one, I can't remember it, but those 3 matter the most. Character is the type of person you are. Competency is, do you have the skill set and the knowledge to do the job you're being hired for? And then chemistry is, do you fit well with the team? And let's be real. I think from a talent standpoint during the 2-10 season, when we talk about, you know, competency, I think that was, remember, we talked about this a lot, that they recruited on potential a lot. These guys have the potential. They have the potential, right? But they didn't actually have the experience. They didn't have the production of that team. Character-wise, you had some shady characters on that 2024 team.
Yes, sir. Including the
2025 team, right?
Yes, sir.
Trying to fight coaches, giving Mike black eyes, all that stuff, right? Okay. Yeah. And then you had chemistry issues. This team just did not gel. That 2014 did not gel. You know, from when Mike first got to even that 3-6 team from the COVID, obviously you had the COVID debacle or the racial debacle when Mike first got there. But that team started, they found a way to win some crazy games. That 2021 team found some great 4th-and-14, one of the most famous plays in Miami Florida State rivalry history, right? They found ways to win games. That 10-3 team in 2022, even though they went on that 3-game losing streak, they stuck together when they could have fallen apart, found ways to win the game. That 13-1 team, I mean, you know, Keon Coleman became the whole offense that season.
Yeah.
And they found ways to win games, right? But then the chemistry just completely fell off in 24, completely fell off in 25. So when you have moments where a punt doinks off somebody's head, the team falls apart. When you have a moment when you go to Stanford for the first time and that team is atrocious, a JV team, but yet you're falling apart because, you know, no one's holding the quarterback accountable to his play. No one's holding certain DBs accountable to their plays, right? Players are tuning out coaches. A lot of it was chemistry issues between players and players and coaches and players, right? So this year, the hope is that you got the competency, that you were able to at least get a little bit better skill set on the offensive line, defensive line, and certain positions, that you have better character players, right? That these players are actually going to stay tuned and hear the coach's message. And then that you have a team that actually has real chemistry. They like each other. They want to be around each other. They want to fight for each other. They want to fight for the fan base. If you got those three, based on the projections that we just saw with Field Steel, then yeah, now you can actually have some hope. But if any of those threes are off, as they have been the last two seasons, you're looking at another repeat.
Yeah, man, that's a really, really great point. And I want to expand on that before we get into some of the offensive defensive talk, because that's huge, right? In 22 and 23, when you had guys like, you know, Jordan Travis as your unspoken leader on the field, right?
Right.
It just makes all the difference. Like the 23 team had so much culture that they were all like, you didn't even need coaches. I feel like they could have just ran the team themselves. And then we heard about in 24 and 25, where it was the coaches had to push these players. They didn't have real leadership. And even when, you know, Tommy came out and said the things he said, we're like, okay, well, you know, hey, we got a little bit of a leadership here.
Right.
As soon as adversity struck, boom, things went the other way. They kind of tucked their tail. And so the thing that I do find interesting this year is like, okay, so Tony White talked about this, right? You had some guys last year where they were disrespecting the logo. Mm-hmm. His words, not mine. And this year's team is so much further ahead of that. Like he's saying, we're doing things in the spring that we weren't doing until almost the fall last year. You got guys that are up early and at the facilities watching film every day in the coach's office nonstop. Now, granted, we've heard all this before, so I don't want to sit here and pretend like this team is just going to be some, you know, great like Indiana last year, right? I'm not saying that. But if what they say is true, and Tony White, at least for whether you love him or hate him, he'll shoot you straight.
Right.
If he's saying there were some culture issues last year and the team has a different, more, you know, kind of blue collar mentality this year, then, and a guy like Deuce Robinson coming back is big because, you know, that's a guy that could have went anywhere or to the NFL, and him coming back helps set your culture there. If everyone is just pulling in the same direction, good things can happen. So to your point, man, I think really you can have all the talent in the world and you can get results like 2024 because the culture was so broken and Mike Norvell was kind of mentally broken too, to where he couldn't lead from the front. And so what you're hoping is you got some fresh faces on the coaching staff. I love this Nick Williams guy, very high energy coach, Cam Martin at running back, you know, things like that. You've had some different changes within the program that hopefully, if nothing else, you can get the culture, maybe not where it was in 22 and 23, but at least better. Then I feel like that's going to lead to results. And so let's talk about some of the position groups here that I just want to share some of my personal thoughts on. Now, again, we're going to get into position group previews as we get closer to the season, but we're talking about why you can exceed the expectations. So if I don't tell you why I think that, you're going to think I'm just blowing smoke. And so when we start on the offense here with the quarterback position, look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Ashton Daniels is some great quarterback or even top five in the ACC, but here's some things that he is, right? He is a good runner, and he has, in my opinion, elevated his floor. And why I say that is at Stanford, he threw 20 picks in 2 years, right? Now, he had a much larger sample set at Stanford than he did at Auburn, but when you break it down into a percentage, 3.7% of his passes got intercepted at Stanford, right? It was 20 picks and 600 passes. At Auburn, that number dropped to 1.6% in 122 passes. And honestly, I went back and watched the film. Neither one of his interceptions was on him, right? One was a game-ending Hail Mary on a 4th and 20 where he just threw it up. And the other was a perfect pass that hit the running back right in the hands, and he blooped it over his head, and it turned into a tip drill that was a pick by Bama. So basically, in 122 passes, he had zero picks that were on him last year. So he's cleaned some of that stuff up. And a lot of that has to do, again, with what he's being asked to do in a better system. And what we're hoping is that Mike Norvell knows that. He can see that and say, look, this is what he's good at. This is some of the things we saw him excel at Auburn in last year. We're going to try and do some of those things. This is the areas that he struggled at Stanford. We're going to stay away from those things. But as a quarterback, man, again, I'm not telling you he's going to be the next Jordan Travis. But what I am saying is his interception percentage went down. His turnover-worthy play percentage per PFF went down. His fumble per carry percentage went down considerably last year at Auburn, from 6.1% at Stanford in 24 to 1.85% at Auburn last year. Meanwhile, his QBR did go up considerably, from 49.9 at Stanford to 67.9 at Auburn. In his sack-adjusted rushing yards, which PFF uses sack-adjusted, which I think is more fair to the quarterback.
Right.
He was top 15 in yards per carry among quarterbacks with at least power four quarterbacks with at least 50 carries last year, and top 10 the year before that at Stanford. So he's getting, he's a solid runner. We know that. But as far as his arm, he showed, at least in the sample set that we saw last year, he was better at taking care of the ball at Auburn. Now, I'm not saying he got to be a better passer, because the numbers still weren't exceptional.
Right.
But really, to me, when you look at this year, Ashton Daniels doesn't have to be like a race car driver. He just has to win the race, right? He just has to not crash the car more than anything, because you have so much talent at the skill positions around you. You just can't screw it up. That's basically, you know, to be honest, man, if this, let's just assume this offensive line was even average. If you put Jordan Travis on this team, I would take this team to probably win 9 games this year, right? I honestly would. Now, the other thing I want to mention about Ashton Daniels here is the Auburn receivers were terrible last year. I know some of that goes on the quarterback, but it wasn't just for Daniels. It was also for Jackson Arnold, who wasn't really a good quarterback either. But according to PFF, among Power Four teams, Auburn had the third lowest receiving grade by a team in all of Power Four per PFF last year. So their receivers were pretty terrible last year. And in case you were wondering, when I talked about Ashton Daniels' interception percentage dropping to 1.6, from 3.7, last year Tommy's was 2.9. So if you can stay under that, then you're already getting an improvement, right? And he's a little bit better runner than Tommy when Tommy's banged up. So you're kind of getting a twofold there. If you just run a little bit tougher and you take care of the ball a little bit better, I think your quarterback position goes at least from a wash, which is what I would have called it preseason, to at least a little bit better than what you had last year, right? He's bigger, he's stronger, he's tougher, he can get you some yards. He's averaged over 6 yards a carry, sack adjusted. I think Tommy's best year was like 5.9. So he is proven to be a better, more consistent runner. Now, when we talk about the wide receivers, man, look, Deuce has some things to clean up with his hands, the bobbling catches and things like that. Yep. But he's a legit proven 1,000-yard receiver, right? You know, Michael, did you ever play spades growing
up? I have,
Right? Like, I love playing spades, right? And, you know, depending on how you play, we play with jokers. So if you knew you had the big joker, right? Deuce is my big joker, man. I don't know how many books the rest of the team's going to win, but I know Deuce Robinson's going to get me a book, right? Mm-hmm. That I do know. That I can take to the bank. He was first in the ACC in yards per game last year, second in yards per catch, and third in total yards with a below-average quarterback. So Ashton Daniels is going to have some better weapons to work with. Danzy put up 571 yards and led the ACC in yards per catch as a redshirt freshman who was basically running on pure athletic ability. He was also top two in long scrimmage plays of 30, 40, and 50 yards last year. He's not a sleeper anymore, so people know who Mekhi Danzy is. But he should be technically more sound and more experienced. And I don't care if you know who he is or not. The dude's a track all-star. If he runs by you, you're not going to catch him. The biggest question for the receivers here this year, obviously, is who's going to be wide receiver three? LaWayne McCoy's gone. Is it going to be Boggs? Is it going to be a freshman like Jason Lopez? Is it going to be Devin Carter? Is it going to be wide receiver by committee at that third spot? That's the one thing that you're looking at more than anything. And then from the tight end position, man, Desirio Riles is a good addition. I've heard some good things about him coming over from Eastern Carolina. He was seventh in the American in receiving yards last year with fewer receptions than 5 out of 6 guys above him. Landon Thomas, as we know, very talented guy, showed potential in 2024, was a little banged up, wasn't used heavily in 2025 as a, you know, a guy that, you know, a position that Gus Malzahn really didn't use heavily anyway.
Right.
Chase Lofton, we heard about, he's a very long athletic guy who can play in the slot at receiver. He was just injured last year and he wasn't available. So, man, I mean, before I go too long on all this, let me just throw it back to you and just get some thoughts on, you know, just Ashton Daniels, because we're going to talk about running backs and the O-line next, but just Ashton Daniels and this receiving core, man, you know, I've talked about this before where the skill positions are loaded for this team. There's no way around it. the quarterback feels like the bottleneck. But if you can just have Ashton Daniels, like the example I said, man, you don't have to go out and outdrive everybody. You just can't crash. You just got to finish the race, man. Right. If you can do that, I think he has the potential to have a better year than expected just by what's around him.
Right. Well, and this is where, again, this is where the plus side of Mike Norvell taking over play calling comes back in. If you go off the historical data, so the Jordan
not
Travis
2024.
Years, yeah, exactly. The Jordan Travis years and the Memphis years, right? Where he has his route combination, the route trees that he likes to use in his type of offense. He's going to emphasize the run game. All you really need Ashton Daniels to do, as you said, is don't crash the car. Don't throw interceptions. Take the easy throw, right? When the deep throw is there, throw it. When the middle throw is there, throw it. When the side outs are, throw it. Like right there. If not, hand it off or run the ball. I think that's where you can leverage an Ashton Daniels who's going to be more durable in the season than a Tommy Castellanos, yeah. Right? Mike's offense has a little bit more imagination than a Gus Malzahn offense does. Gus Malzahn has 19 playbooks or 19 plays in that playbook, and he runs them all in consecutive order again and again and again.
Yep.
You kind of knew what was coming after the Alabama game. You knew when the reverse was coming. You knew when the deep throw was coming. You knew when the side out was coming. It was pretty predictable. Well, with Mike Norvell, outside of that 24 season, and again, that 24 season is such an anomaly with his play calling. Yeah. Because he had a guy who couldn't even throw a touchdown pass to a brick, by the way, which I saw the video of that again yesterday on my Instagram. And I was just like, how in the world did this guy become quarterback at Florida State?
Dude, we need a 30 for 30 on the 23 to 24 goodness. Transition. It's wild.
It's wild. And so I think Mike Norvell really can get really creative to how to pull out the strengths of and Ashton Daniels so that you then can leverage the talent pool of the skill set, which is the wide receivers.
Yeah. And if you're not asking him to do too much, you can put the load on the other guys, right? We know last year was with Gus Malzahn was very much in the pass game, was a spray and pray type of offense. Like you just chunk it deep and hope Deuce is tall enough to go get it off somebody's head. And the other thing I will mention that, you know, we saw an improvement in Ashton Daniels from Stanford to Auburn. Remember, his assistant quarterback coach at Auburn is also at Florida State now. So you get that continuity coming over as well, who he credits with a lot of his development. So even if he's just the Auburn Ashton Daniels and maybe, you know, one notch better, I think that he's going to be probably better than what you got last year from Tommy. Right. Now, the part where I really get excited is the next one that we're going to talk about here, and that is the running back position. Look, there's no way to shake it, guys. This is a good running back room, right? I mean, you got Trey Wisner, who comes over from Texas, led their team in rushing the past two seasons. He was a 1,000-yard back on a playoff team in 2024. Now, his numbers did drop last year because of injury, but he still led Texas in rushing, and his numbers were still on par when you look at attempts per game and yards per carry. He just played in six fewer games. So if he had played in six more games, you probably would have a back-to-back 1,000-yard rusher who probably wouldn't even be on your team because he'd be in the NFL right now. So, like, this dude is a legitimate back. And I even had a Texas fan comment on one of our recent episodes. It's like, dude, the guy just falls for 5 yards, right? He's just a good running back. That was a huge get. Then you add in Kroma, eighth among freshman running backs last year in yards per carry, tied for 6 in missed tackles forced, despite having a minimum of 58 to as many as 131 fewer carries than the 5 above him. So basically what that means is, based on workload, he was pound for pound probably the best freshman running back, one of the best freshman running backs in the country last year. He just didn't get a lot of carries because we know that running back rotation was absolutely ridiculous last year. So if you get him a higher workload, you let him get going, and you know, we're probably going to see a lot of 21 personnel this year to take advantage of a loaded backfield. So if you do the animal with quarterback, so if you do those things, you got two horses right there to lead this stable.
Right.
You also have Sam Singleton, who's basically lightning in a bottle that just can't seem to get on the field, right? Every time
he does,
boom, you know, he just breaks off 20 yards and then goes to the bench and never comes back. You know, even a dark horse that a lot of people don't talk about is Jamari Sands, who put up 682 all-purpose yards and led FAU in rushing last year. So, man, you got some backs in this backfield. You have a stable of talented backs. The biggest question is, who's going to be opening the holes for them on the offensive line? But I will say two things about this offensive line. One, pretty much every starter is likely to be an upperclassman. So at least right. you have experience. You're not starting freshmen that have never played before. All the transfers that came in, even the guys that like Otto and them who are projected to maybe be starters, they're all veteran guys. So they've been around. They're developed physically. So they should be big body guys who can step in and play. Two, they are actually healthy this spring, which they were not last year. You know, we heard a lot, Herb Hand talk a lot about last year where these guys couldn't run together as a unit until almost the fall time. Right. And as we talk about on the show frequently, that is the one position where continuity matters more than anything else. And if you can't get continuity in the spring and in the summer, it's hard to make up for that in the fall. At least right. you had a healthy offensive line unit in the spring this year. They can work on that all summer. And they do get a tune-up game in week zero to actually get live game reps with the starting five. And we know Herb Hand doesn't rotate a whole lot, so you actually get some quality snaps there against New Mexico State. And then the last thing I'll say on the offensive line here is, look, man, for Herb Hand, like maybe we got some recruiting things that we need to kind of give a side eye to. But from an on-field coaching perspective, we've said this before, man. I'm going to trust him until he gives me a reason not to. He took Florida State from 63rd of 68 Power 4 teams in pass block efficiency last year, from 63rd yep. all the way up to 19th.
Yeah.
And 132nd in yards per carry to 18th in 1 year. Now, I don't know if the ceiling of this group is going to be as high as last year, but I at least trust that the floor will be respectable with a bunch of veteran guys under Herb Hand. So if right. that offensive line is even decent, middle-of-the-road ACC, and you got a mobile quarterback with a talented stable of backs, the biggest question for me is, can Ashton Daniels' arm and this receiving core do enough to back the defense off so they don't just load the box and make Ashton Daniels throw the ball? If Deuce can handle that and Danzy can handle that and the tight ends can handle that and you can back this defense off a little bit, not like what we saw in 2024 where they could just load the box and challenge you and just basically disrespect your offense. If you can do that, man, I think you can have one of the better running games in the ACC.
Well, absolutely. And that is a bread and butter of Mike Norvell's offense. I'm going to keep going back to that. He wants to run the ball. He wants to set up the run. He wants to power run. He wants to wear the defense out. So that in the fourth quarter, when they're still running counter and they're jamming their face masks into your defensive lineman, you're worn out and you're tired. They're going to run. You're going to see a lot of heavy dose of counter because that's one of the things Mike Norvell loves. That's one of his favorite run plays. You're going to see a lot of sprint reads. You're going to see a lot of sprint outs, you know, where they run and it looks like it could be an RPO pass. And then Ashton keeps it and he's taking it up there. I think you have a really talented set of running backs in that room that they need to settle on their top two running backs that they're just going to work like a dog. Uzma, I mean, look at that dude. I saw a picture of him the other day, and I'm like, why are we not running him almost 250 times a season?
Yeah.
That he needs to get the bulk of the running. And I get it. Running backs are, you know, not the way they were built, like Greg Jones back in the day, Ward Dunn, all those guys, Dalvin Cook, guys like that, you know, Devontae Freeman, that now you need to have a, you know, multiple set of backs. Okay, well, get Chroma and then get one other guy and then have like a third just for a spell of a time period.
But
man, pour all of that into that running back. Man, run them guys until they make them earn that NIL money, dadgummit.
Yeah.
And with Herb Hand, until he proves differently, my assumption is this offense line is going to even be a slight uptick from last year's offensive line, which was better than what the previous offensive line was. I mean, you know, while DJ was throwing touchdown to brick walls, he didn't have time to even find maybe a potentially open wide receiver at any point in time. And the reason I say this is because then when they put in Brock Glenn, look what happened to him. He got blew up. So again, it's just the situation that it is. They have the ability to be better. We should see that better. Hopefully with Mike Norvell's play calling, we'll be able to see even more dedication, not just to the same 19 plays that Gus ran, but like just a smorgasbord of different ways they're going to run some of the similar run concepts.
Yeah. Now, like, I don't know if I agree with Phil that we might have the third best or tied for the third best offensive line in the ACC, but if you do, if it's even top five, and you think of a 21 personnel, right? Because that offensive line last year, to your point, was better than 2024 by a country mile. And so if it can just be a shade of what that was last year, it's just you had a quarterback that couldn't see over the offensive line. You had some, you know, a true freshman back and, you know, Sawchuk just wasn't the guy that we thought he was, right?
That's right.
But if you have a decent offensive line and you think about 21 personnel with Wisner and Kroma and Ashton Daniels in there, like you better load the box to try and stop that. Right. And at that point, you have options to pop them over top, right? That's exactly, right. Man. And so, Michael, I got to check my temperature. We're getting a little too positive right now. we got to check ourselves. But it's the truth, man. Again, this is why when you look at the numbers, like, again, these guys, they did things. These right. numbers don't lie. And so the numbers tell you that they should be better
right.
than what the expectations are. And then when you flip over to the defense, look, man, this one will be a little bit more streamlined here, but Tony White's defense made a massive jump in year two at Syracuse. They made a massive jump in year one at Nebraska. It wasn't so much a year two jump. It was a year one jump, but then they maintained that level at year two. So you should get that year two bump under Tony White, right? Statistically, they did improve last year in passing, rushing, and scoring defense. Now, we know 2024 had a lot to do with that offense being worn out. But, man, when you look at some of the numbers last year, like the 23 defense gave up 19.3 points per game. Last year was 22. Right. Mm-hmm. So they were right on par. Now, if you factor out the Orange Bowl, mm-hmm. it was 15.9 points Correct. Per game. Pass yards per game, that 23 defense gave up 170 without the Orange Bowl, 180 with the Orange Bowl. Last year, you only gave up 190. So, like, you're right there on par with the I know it didn't always look good, right? You got torched in the Pitt game. You got ran all over in Virginia. You got ran all over in Florida. But you did see some improvement, right? Last year, they gave up 138 rush yards per game. In 2023, they gave up 135 without the Orange Bowl. With the Orange Bowl, it was 152. So, like, the defense took a step better from 2024. But if you can get to where you can take that year two bump, the defense could get better anyway, man. I mean, I have my concerns about this defense, especially in that interior defensive line unit, but I certainly think they can be improved, right? They lost a lot, and I think a lot of people look at what they lost, but I focus more on what they kept. A lot of the, you know, the pieces that they lost, they didn't really mean right. anything, right?
Right?
I like a lot of the pieces that you bring back. You know, I mean, you got guys – You got Rylan Kennedy, you got the Desir twins who were true freshmen last year that they're not flying under anybody's radar, but just from maturation and another year in strength and conditioning as a true freshman, they should get better. Kevin right. Wynn is a workhorse from what we've heard. You know, they've said that, what's his name? Daniel Lyons. I always forget about him. Mm-hmm. Daniel Lyons has accepted the challenge of knowing he has to be the guy on that interior unit. You get Diamante Diggs back, which was like a 6'6", 260 edge rusher that got hurt like the first game of the right. season. I like Deontay McCray as well. He was good for you last year. You know, it's not a top tier or deep group, but if they can actually set the edge and the linebackers are decent enough at the second level to fill the clean up the stuff that the defensive line doesn't get to, they can be improved, man, right? Daryl Jackson, to me, is really the only one on that front that I consider a loss.
Right.
Everyone else, I think the ones you brought back were the good ones, right? And so the only thing to me, this defensive line this year kind of reminds me of when I was watching film for Pitt last year, right? Not a big group, not a bunch of 300-pounders like an Alabama or a Georgia or something like that, but kind of an undersized but speedy defensive line that can be moved around a lot, that can get in the backfield and cause and be a little bit disruptive. It just really, really depends on the linebackers and being able to clean stuff up. And for that group, I already told you, I really like Chris Jones, the Mekhi Bayer kid. You know, he was injured in the spring, but he has experience in Tony White's defense. Between him and Caleb LaValle being back, that gives you a little – who you lost all last year for injury, that gives you a little bit more athleticism at the position. And then I think the DB room has enough pieces to be better than last year. Let's be honest, man. And the coaching could be a little bit different,
right.
You know, there too. I mean, Pat Surtain could recruit his butt off, but that secondary has always been underwhelming to the talent level that they had. So, I mean, as far as the defense goes, like, I can see in year two under Tony White with some returning pieces and some new pieces added, I can see that defense being a little bit better, at least a little bit better.
Yeah, I can see it being better. I think you hit the nail on the head of the linebackers. Because of the depth of the interior line on the defensive line, you're going to see teams try to take advantage of that. They're going to try to run right up the middle to test that defensive line to see how strong they are right up the interior. And because of that, it's going to be on the linebackers to make sure they're filling the gaps, that they're not letting a 2-yard run turn into a 7-8 yard run. And now guess what? Now you're in the defensive backfield and you're asking corners and safeties to take on running backs, right?
Yeah, you're asking no arm or a little to make a wrap up and make a tackle.
Well, Ohio State has to worry about that right now. Yeah,
they're going to learn real quick.
They're going to learn real fast. Now, watch he go to Ohio State and he becomes like this all-star.
I know, DB. Of course.
Anyways, but that's the thing is what the linebackers have to do is they have to fill those gaps appropriately and quickly. They have to act on instinct. They have to make sure that they're not guessing wrong, that they know right. Right, that they know right. They're getting into the gaps. They're turning those what would be a 7-8 yard gain to 2 yards or less gains. They're helping that defensive line until they can, you know, figure some things out. And then the ends have got to be like in dog attack mode without losing containment. I think if they could do that, then yeah, I think you'll see this 3-3-5 stack really do something, this do a little bit more than this year. Historically, it's been proven under Tony White that second year gets a little bit better. So we'll see how that goes. Last year wasn't crazy bad. Wasn't mm-hmm. crazy.
You had bad games.
You had bad games. I mean, obviously the Pitt game was one of the most atrocious. The Virginia game was another one of that as well too. The Miami game, You had a really good game plan. The problem is that you had to pick your poison, either stop the throw or stop the run. They sold out against the run, and Carson Beck just beat them through the air.
Yeah,
you know, and then they took their foot off the gas, and you were able to kind of make it a little bit of the game in late in the fourth quarter, but it wasn't really a game. So, if they can have a better attack from the ends, sound defense from the linebackers, and hold down the fort over the air, I think they could be a top, you know, top five, top three defensive team in the ACC this year.
Yeah, and I mean, the problem to me is you do have some tough offenses, right? That Miami offense is going to be probably unreal this year, depending on how that shakes out, because they're just so loaded, right? Pitt should have a good offense with that quarterback coming back. SMU has got one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and Kevin Jennings coming to your place. So they're going to have a good offense. Jeff Brohm always puts together a good offense at Louisville for the most part when he's got a quarterback. But, you know, I was looking at some of these numbers like production, and Virginia, I think they bring back like 11% of their yards this year. So they've lost a ton off that offense. So you should have some opportunities. Now, to your point, they can, should they, could they? You know the saying, Michael.
Right.
You can want in one hand. You can do something in the other. You got to actually step up and be able to do it, right? You can't talk about it. You got to actually go out on the field and do it. But the pieces and the processes are there. Right. Obviously, year one in the defense versus year two, I know you lost a lot, but I think there was 9 guys when I looked last time that are returning that at least started one game last year. So there is at least a little bit more familiarity with the system. Now, the one thing to me, and we'll make this real quick, is special teams is a bit of a wild card, as we talked about. You got a new punter who looks good, you know, but his numbers were just kind of pedestrian last year, right? If he's as good, if he's half as good as punting as he is at posting on social media, we'll be straight. We'll be straight on special teams. What does worry me a little bit is the kicker here. Obviously, you know, he's posted some good clips I've seen on Instagram or whatnot of kicking field goals and Doak that looks good. But this is a guy that ain't made a field goal since 2024 because he was a backup kicker last year. Makes me a little bit nervous from that department, right? Because you could have, we just talked about 4-year games where a 1-score game. It could come down to a kick. The other thing is, though, the new special teams coordinator does have 20-plus years of experience coordinating special teams. And Papuchis could scheme some things up to block a kick, but everything else was kind of a disaster. And so hopefully that gives them a bump. But, man, when we bring this all home, all in all, I really do think this team has the potential to be better across the board. It just really comes down to that schedule and how you overcome that. It comes down to finding ways to win games when they're winnable. Now, if you're losing by, you know, 20 to Miami, I hate to say it, but if you're losing like 20 by Miami and Hard Rock or something like that, I don't expect you to just, you know, hit the turbo button at the end. But if you're in that double overtime game in Virginia, if you're on that final drive to go down and tie the game against Stanford, you got to find ways to win those games. You cannot let punts doink off your head. You have got to win these games. And daggone it, you've got to find a way to win a road game for the first time in 2 years. You got to. I know it's a tough road schedule. But, man, to beat – like, when you look at it from a picture, to beat the expectations, basically in the ACC, what you got to do is you got to win the winnable home games, UVA and NC State, right? Those are two winnable home games. They're pretty close to you in regular season win expectations. They're close to you in the odds. They're close to you in the projections. you're now getting the home field advantage. You have to win those games. Then at a minimum, you have to split SMU and Clemson. You've got to take advantage of that home schedule. You got to beat one or both of those teams. Then what you got to do is you have to beat Boston College on the road. Every one of these projections has Boston College basically dead last, right? They are a cellar dweller of the ACC looking at next year. You cannot have that be the Stanford game of 2027 or 26. Cannot happen. You cannot go up there and lay an egg, right? And then, you know what, man? If you can do that, and then you basically need to win one of the remaining four games, either Clemson or SMU, and the three road games, and you're at five ACC wins. Again, I know that's not good enough, but you just exceeded expectations, right? I don't know that you're going to beat Bama, but maybe you beat Florida in the two cupcakes. That gets you to eight wins, right? That gets you where you're supposed to be if you're talking about just beating the expectations, not being where we want to be in the playoffs and all that stuff. But that's what you got to do, man. It basically needs you. You got to win one of the last four to get to five wins in the ACC. And you're going to beat the two cupcakes. You should better, or we're going to fire people anyway, right? Now, is that good enough? Like I said, no. At seven wins, he should probably still be fired, right? I don't think they would at seven regular season wins. But it's a start, and it would beat the expectations, which is the talking point of the show. This wasn't, can Florida State make the playoffs? This wasn't, can Florida State win the ACC? It's, can you get above that 6.5 win threshold that Vegas has you at? Can you get above the 11th, 12th, and 13th projections that we talked about in the opening of this show? I think if the culture is there, to your point, if this team is better across the board and you can take advantage of home schedule and actually win a road game, man, the path is there to do it, right? Doesn't mean they will. But the path is there to do it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. The path is right there in front of them. The chance of them doing it is higher than the chance of them not doing it.
Yeah.
I'll just say that.
In a normal world. Yeah.
In a normal world, the chance of them being able to beat that projection of 6.5 wins is viable. You have four games, Miami, Alabama, Clemson, and Florida. Those are your four. Those are the four toughest games you play every year. Doesn't matter what they look like. Doesn't matter that Florida's having a new head coach. Those are your four toughest games every year. So if you take those out, there are eight games. And the goal is seven. You have to go 7-1 in those eight games, right?
And two should be automatic wins.
And two are automatic. So, okay. So take those out. Let's count those as automatic wins. There's six games right there. Six games that you need to go 5-1. With your hardest game being SMU in that whole thing. Maybe Louisville is in there as well, too, right? They play Louisville.
On the road at Louisville.
On the road a little bit. So maybe those two. So of the six games, there's two of them that are really, really hard, right, of those six games up. So if you take out the four, you take out the two automatic wins, it comes down to a six-game season, right? You should go 5-1. At worst, 5-1. If they can do that, then they put themselves in the driver's seat to be over that projection and get to seven wins.
Yeah, and I mean, like we said, in a normal world where you don't have things you can't explain, like how you are the top three in the ACC in yardage difference, but you should have been 6-2, but you're 2-6. Right. How you have, you know, preseason number one in projections and end up dead last in the ACC. In a normal world, the path is there. They should win 7-8 games this year based on what they have relative to everyone else. In a Mike Norvell world, I ain't betting a daggone dollar that they're going to do it, right? That's not going to do it. But I think they could.
Right.
And so, I know it's a little bit positivity here. I know we dropped a little bit that people probably ain't ready for all this. But you know what? There's plenty of channels out there that just trash this program 24/7, 365. Right. You can go watch them too to bring you back down to earth. But the point is, again, man, I don't know that either one of us are betting our money for Florida State to make a bowl this year. Probably not. Mike Norvell probably gets fired this year. Mm-hmm. I understand all that's probably going to happen. But based on the numbers and the things that we looked at, we talked about in this show, you should be able to exceed expectations. You should be able to make a bowl, and you should be able to at least get back on the right path. Now, that might be disappointing to some because you just want this whole thing to end, and I'm there with you.
Right.
But we still want Florida State to win because we're Florida State fans. And so it would be nice. Look, man, when we were whipping tail in 2023, trust me, I didn't care who the coach was. I was having a great time. Right. And so the one reason that you might not want him to hang around is recruiting, which we'll talk about now. We'll make it real quick because there's no point in spending a lot of time on recruiting because it changes by the day, right? It changes more often than you change your underpants. So to rewind, we lost Mekhi Williams, but strangely enough, that door is still open. He just camped at Florida State and said he didn't want to close that door. So I don't understand why you decommitted, then committed. look, man, as far as that goes, like, yes, it was a hit. It was a gut punch to lose the crown jewel, essentially, of your class, right? He was your highest rated commit. We got DBs coming out of our ears, man. I'm not worried about a DB commit. What was really more tough, the tough pill to swallow, was we lost him to Wisconsin, who also sucks, right? You should never lose a Florida kid to Wisconsin, especially a team that went, a Wisconsin team that went 4-8 last year. That's the part that hurt. Now, they might just be ponying up a ton of cash to get him, but that door's still open, so we'll see. Luke Fickell might get fired this year, and he might be right back in your class. You also lost Greg Batson, linebacker, this year. Oh, well, not crying over a three-star linebacker. But what you did gain in the last week was you gained four-star wide receiver Sean Green. That's a good pickup slot out of Camden County, Georgia. That's kind of my neck of the woods where I grew up. You beat out Georgia in state school. He was just on their campus, so it was, I'm sure, a committable offer. That's a good win for them on the trail.
Yeah.
Four-star running back Jaden Miles. He was just on a visit to Ohio State. Man, that's a big win for this staff, yeah, right? Cam Martin putting in work. We talked about the running backs in this in the earlier part of the show. Cam Martin's produced a 1,000-yard rusher in the last four seasons. Every single season, he's been a position coach. That's, I got, right, confidence in that guy. Four-star linebacker Jannard Albright, a flip from South Carolina. That's why I don't care about three-star linebacker, because we just got a four-star. And we added another three-star linebacker, Ulrich Johnson III, who I know people are going to say, oh, three-star, he's the 102nd linebacker in the country or whatever it is. The kid had 118 tackles last year. I think 15 and a half tackles for loss, 12 sacks, 12 and a half sacks. His production's crazy, and I've heard, yeah, the film is really good, so he may end up climbing up a little bit there. Shout out to Ernie Sims, right? That linebacker position has been massively under-recruited for a long time, and Ernie's putting in some work considering the product he's got to sell.
Right.
Now, they're still ranked 51st, so they got a long way to go, but, man, it's at least nice to see you get some momentum.
Yep.
All that probably won't matter if Mike Norvell gets fired and the staff gets wiped out, but if you have a better-than-expected season, you can see the momentum start to build, right? So you just got to go back it up on the field.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, this is momentum. You know, the thing that's been hurting Florida State this whole offseason is there's either been no news or bad news. Just,
yep.
It's just what it is. No news, which leads fans to speculate. Bad news, which leads fans, which is basically rage bait to FSU fans.
Yeah.
So to have consecutive days this week where we've had some good news with some good recruiting battle wins, that's good. Now, you know, you're probably like me, who is like, okay, yeah, come back to me in December or January, whenever the signing day comes. When they sign with FSU, then I'll be excited about them. But right now, I can say, okay, you know, I see what Mike and the coaches are doing.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. Again, man, I'm not going to complain of good news, right?
Right.
They got a long way to go. I think Alabama's around the 52. So, look, hey, man, I'm just saying. Now, before we get out of here, the last thing is, man, we have not caught up on baseball and softball in some time, and there has been a lot of talk, mm-hmm, about baseball, especially softball, with, mm-hmm, the recent news that broke. Now, obviously, baseball ended disappointing, just as softball did. So both of them got some soul-searching to do themselves, mm-hmm, right? I think St. John's got put out. Alabama won that, mm-hmm, series pretty easily. That was pretty an embarrassing loss. You know, St. John's was like 1-8 against Power, mm-hmm, 4 teams coming in there, and you lost to them twice. Mm-hmm. It's just not good. You've got some issues to address, man. That offense, it was just not good enough. Home runs were down 25%. Errors, yep, on the defense were up almost 59%. Like, it was not the team we expected, right? I think they, right, missed on a lot of transfers. Yep. They had a lot of guys leave so far. I mean, I think some of those, you know, maybe other opportunities, maybe Link's just having some for real conversations in these exit interviews and cleaning house. But so far, we'll focus on the ones coming in. Is I like the two transfers. You've only gotten two, but I like the two that you've got so far. You landed FAMU transfer Jackson McKenzie. Doesn't even have to get a new place, as my guy Spartan Old 71 said. Like, you don't even have to sign a new lease. His sister is also on the softball team, so that was a slam dunk for Florida, yep, State there. All SWAC DH, also plays first base. He can pitch, but he probably should not.
He should not.
His ERA was not good. But, man, swinging the stick is why you brought him here, right? In 126 at-bats last year, he hit .397 with 13 doubles, 12 home runs, and 52 RBIs, had an .817 slugging percentage. And I know he's from the lower level, and people are going to poo-poo on that, but he did go 3-for-3 with an RBI against the Gators last year.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, he at least showed a little bit of flashes that against a Power 4 opponent. Now, the one I'm really excited about, and I'm probably going to screw this name up, is you also landed the Big East Pitcher of the Year, Camden Caden, I'm going to go Suki.
Suki. Okay. Not
sucky. I don't want to say Suki because he's not Suki. I don't know how to say it. I'm gonna work on that, guys.
Yeah.
Left-handed pitcher, posted a 272 ERA last year, 105 punch outs, walked just 23 batters in 89.1 innings. He had 15 starts. I mean, man, the kid was lights out last year. Now, I know it's another non-power forward, but UConn is a good baseball program. Remember, we had them in a regional a couple years ago here in Tallahassee, and he did face two power four programs last year to open the season. So, again, opening performance. He had a chance to get better throughout the season. Kansas State and Arizona, he gave up 4 earned runs on 6 hits, but had 14 Ks, 4 walks, and 12.1 innings. So, man, you know, again, like, I know the bullpen's always been rough, but Posey's been pretty good with the starters. Like, he's pretty good at getting that starting staff going. And, you know, you could very well lose your entire starting rotation to the draft this year. They're all projected to be, you know, at least draft a bull in a position where they could go. So this is a big get to start that rebuild of the weekend rotation. You still need some hitters and you still need some more arms, but man, these are two good additions to start out with.
Yeah, I think it's two good additions, especially with the southpaw left-hander there who, you know, I think he had 89 innings, I believe, and 5-3, I think he went. So that's, you know, a pretty good guy. I think low, mid-2 ERA.
Yeah.
Micah Posey has been really good with the starting weekend rotation there. You know, obviously, like you said, we need to get some more arms, especially in that bullpen. We need a bullpen strategy. And we need a hitting coach. And so, yeah, and of course, you know, with the offensive firepower that we just brought with a big bat, you know, hopefully that bat will do some more damage. You know, I think that was the biggest thing that we recognized in the baseball team this year was that, man, once Miles Bailey went out, you had nothing to protect that lineup. Mm-hmm. And the pitchers were just going at it. We were swinging out of the strike zone. We didn't have a plan at the plate. We didn't know what pitches we were trying to go after. So we were swinging at a lot of things. The only downside to the players that have left, I know we're focusing on the players that are coming in, is that I would have wished that Paulino Jr. could have stayed because I think that bat is going to be a big bat as he matures in his body and his mechanics over the next couple of years. So other than that, I do like what we're doing. Obviously, linking them, the boys have a long way to go, but I like the start that they've had so far.
Yeah, we need a lot more than two, and we need some big bats, as you mentioned, because even, you know, Miles Bailey got hurt, what, a third of the way into the season, still led the team in home runs. So you've got to get some power. You know, in the past, you would have a Cam Smith. You would have a James Tibbs. You would have, you know, multiple guys, Max Williams. You'd have guys that could knock it in the parking lot. And so you need some of that in this lineup. Now, let's get to the hottest topic, and we saved it for last, is the softball team. And there was a lot of people rubbed wrong by Issa Torres hitting the portal and Jasani Beauchamp hitting the portal. Man, it sucks. There's no way around it. Like, this was tough, man. It was a stab and twist moment for us Florida State fans. It was really hard to stomach. And I will say this, man, there's a lot of people that should frankly be disgusted by themselves by the comments that they made about these girls leaving. Because let me just say this. We hate it, right? We hate seeing them leave. We hate what the college game has become and the portal and NIL. We're with you, right? But, you know, as you were telling me, man, like we were talking about when it happened, when the news broke, like these softball girls, I looked it up. A pro softball player makes around $50,000 to $75,000 a year.
And that's the best one.
That's the best ones. Like the girl, the Canada girl at Texas Tech got $1 million last year. Look, Issa's the best player in the country. That's not a pitcher. She could very well command 10 times what her pro salary would be for one year.
Yep.
Florida State, from what we understand, had the money that maybe they could have paid up to keep her, but it probably would have wrecked the rest of their roster.
Correct.
And so it's one of those situations, the same with Beauchamp. You know what I mean? Like, you hate to see him go, but you can't wreck your roster over one person. And I get it. Like, maybe if she'd have been a starting pitcher, maybe you pay up for that because it's just so dominant. But at the same time, it's like, man, there's only so much you can do, and they only get so many chances to make real money in their lifetime, right? Yeah. And the thing where people are like, oh, well, you know, sign with Florida State, we developed all this stuff. I get it, man. But how many of these people complain and still work at their first job, right?
Exactly.
Brother, I started at Sonny's washing dishes for like $5.85 an hour or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't work at Sonny's no more. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be mad at someone better in their life, right? It's disappointing as a sports fan, as a Florida State fan.
Sure.
But then look at what we just did, right? You just landed an amazing player that we're going to talk about. But you also got Ashton Danley announced she's coming back. You got Jazzy, one of your best pitchers from last year, coming back. You still got some holes to fill. We know this was a really young team with a lot of talented freshmen last year that are going to come back. I don't even think you took a transfer last year.
Nope.
So you got good, you know, pillars of this roster to build around. And then the girl that we just added, son, she is Nicole Edmiston, I think is how you say her last name. It should be Nicole Hits Bombs because that's what she does. She comes over from Stetson. And look, man, I'm just going to say she was a junior. So I think she's a rising junior this year.
Yep.
But man, I mean, let me just rattle off this bio real quick, right? So this young lady here, she hit last year. She was the A-Sun Player of the Year, the A-Sun Offensive Player of the Year, first team all selection, all conference. She hit 23 home runs, 453 average, 900 slugging percentage. She was a top 10 first baseman by Softball America. She set program records for home runs, for hits. She had 77 hits, which was a record for the single game. She started with a 15-game hit streak. She had 70 RBIs and 153 total bases. She drew 41 walks. I mean, unreal when you look at the numbers that she was able to do. I'm not saying she's Issa Torres.
No.
But I'm saying it's probably like Issa with a little bit more power. Right. Yes. I don't know that she's going to have the crazy hit streak or whatever that Issa had or whatnot. But if you're talking about paying crazy money for Issa or getting someone who's pretty close to being just as good for maybe a lot less, man, I mean, I hate to say it, but you got to take that deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me back up real quick. You know, obviously, social media has allowed people to become keyboard warriors. They get keyboard muscles, as I like to say, and they start saying just really dumb things. You know, you wouldn't say that, and you wouldn't like it if that was your daughter, somebody, some grown man was talking to, saying all those things about. And, of course, this is again, we live in a capitalistic society. This is America, right, where you are able to go better yourself. And if it was your kid, you'd be doing the same thing for her, knowing that when she's about to go into professional sports, she's going to make maybe at most $75,000 a year, where right now she can go command $1.5, almost $2 million from another program. Florida State ain't spending that kind of money on softball. Mm-hmm. We know the driver of Florida State athletics is football, even though it's in the ground right now, right? Florida State softball is one of the top 10 funded programs in the country when it comes to NIL. Let me just say that again. Florida State softball is one of the top 10 softball programs that are funded NIL-wise in the country. It's not that they're hurting for money, but they don't got a Texas Tech billionaire oil guy. They don't got Texas money. They don't got Oklahoma money. So they're not going to throw $1.5 million into a player knowing that they can spread that around equally and have a top roster in the ACC and a top, you know, nationally ranked top 10 roster in the country, instead of putting all that money into one player and then having to skim off the bottom of the barrel for the rest of the team. That's just not how Florida State's going to run that softball program. That's not how Coach Lonnie is going to run that. They had the money, but the worry was for Issa and her team was, okay, if y'all spend that money on me, what about the rest of the team?
Yeah.
And this is my last year. I want to win a national championship. So, you know what, Issa? Go on with your bad self. Go get that money. Go play for a really good program. We might see you in a College World Series. And if we do, it's always going to be go Noles on that behind, right? Now, going to this player that we just picked up, I mean, man, she's coming in. We just traded a National Player of the Year for a Conference Player of the Year who has a little bit better power. She's at first base, so we're going to have to move some players over there. She's not shortstop. But again, this is going to give Lonnie and that team an opportunity to retool. This is the first time in 2 years they've taken a transfer portal player. They've got a young cast of crew that is very talented. They went very high school heavy the last couple of years in recruiting, and now we're going to start seeing some of those players come to fruition. Obviously, you got Jazzy back. You got Ashton Daniel, who has a powerful bat and a powerful arm at the same time. So I feel like this is setting them up for a longer run than just putting all your chips in the immediate run right now.
Yeah, 1,000%. Like, would you rather have a great player or a really good team? Like, correct. You have to kind of pick and choose it, because let's be honest, you just kind of can't do both, right?
Right.
Until we strike oil in Florida somewhere, like, we're just kind of stuck, right? I mean, hopefully so. But yeah, man, I mean, I trust Lonnie knows what she's doing. Again, it's a painful loss. It stinks.
Right.
Some of these people are like, I don't wish her well and all that stuff. Man, that's crazy talk. You know, go get yours, man. I promise you. You know, I've been with where I'm at 12 years now or whatever. If someone offered me triple 10 times that salary, deuces, I'm out. So I'll see y'all later. But that's going to be it for this show, guys. I know we ran you a little bit longer than we normally do, but we are taking next week off. I will be out of town for next week at our normal recording time. So we just wanted to make sure to cover all kind of bases. We had a ton of football talk to cover, and I hope you guys really, really enjoyed that. The thing that we've been hinting at is so close to being live. We were actually going to record the promo for it today. It may be in the next week or two. We just got to get some of the background stuff hammered out there. But I'm telling you, it's going to be a cool new feature for the Florida State Seminole fan community. So be on the lookout for that. We'll be doing some teaser posts and some soft launches coming up. Some of you guys I'll be reaching out to personally to go ahead and get you guys involved with the things that we're doing. So really, really excited about that. You can also check out our website at plantthespear.com. We've been covering articles. You know, I know people probably don't think we have a website or don't think about it. We're covering articles just like everybody else is. So we got a bunch of written stuff over there to make sure you can check out. Follow us on social media where we're active as well to get in on the conversation. Of course, if you enjoyed the show on YouTube or on podcast form, wherever you're watching, drop a like and subscribe, drop a rate and review, help us reach other Noel fans, help us grow and get involved with Plant the Spear, because we are a fan for fan outlet, man. We are for the fans, by the fans. We're all about you guys and we greatly appreciate it. So Michael, I think that's going to do it for today, my man. Really enjoyed this one. Had a lot of good talk. Looking forward to getting into preseason content. It's what, like 80 something days away or something. It's sneaking up on us. So we got a lot going on. We got media days coming up next month. We're going to get to talk with coaches and players. So lots of reason to jump on the Plant the Spear train right now, guys. Look, I know things aren't all great for the football team, but again, we're going to be consistent. We're not going to take a day off for you guys. So with that being said, we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks for watching. As always,
go Noles.